top of the morning to y'all. Welcome to the Royals Rundown Podcast with myself, Jake Milham, and Jeremy Greco is joining me on this brisk Sunday morning. Jeremy, how are we feeling today, man?
You know, I am a year older as we're recording this today, so I'm trying to decide if I'm excited about still being alive or grumpy about it, so I'll get back to you. How's that?
That, you know what? That sounds like a great plan to me. You're a spry old 29 years old today, so that's where you're at.
Yeah, 20,
no.
I can't even say it. The word will not come out of my mouth.
Well, hey, if you want to wish Jeremy a happy birthday, please go do so on his socials at Hikaias, or you could do it on the Royals Rundown Podcast socials on Twitter and on TikTok. Would love to have some good birthday wishes alongside the holiday wishes. Jeremy, did you how's your Thanksgiving down south?
It was good. You know, my mom always cooks up a nice Thanksgiving dinner, and I know this is probably sacrilegious. I know there was a whole big thing on Only Weird Games where they got into like stuffing isn't as good on the second day or something, and I'm just like, I don't like any of the leftovers necessarily except for the turkey. I'm like, all right, let's make some turkey sandwiches. Let's go.
Yeah.
But like I love, you know, mashed potatoes, sweet potato casserole, green beans, all this stuff. But on the second day, it's like, is it still as good? And I'm not there anymore, so I don't have any of the leftovers. I tried to sneak out with some turkey. I didn't quite make it. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was, you know, nice.
You got a whole like wife of your own and all of your children. They're furry, I know, children, right? But you know.
Oh, we don't celebrate the traditional Thanksgiving stuff. So we kept it nice and low key. We had a nice, you know, little meal, just myself and honey and the dogs, and it was good. We still have plenty of leftovers. My lovely wife learned from her mother the inability to cook for just two people. She has for four or five at least. So we have plenty of leftovers, and I'm gonna go work on those for the remainder of the week and see what I can whip up.
Yeah, I think a lot of my problem is that my mom was, you know, when I was growing up, she was cooking Thanksgiving for 10, 15, 20 people. Oof. Now she when they moved, none of us really make a lot of friends. And you know, as we've gotten older, family has moved on, or, you know, they're not as close, whatever. So it's just the five, six of us now. And she's still cooking for so many people. I have so many leftovers. Oof. It's just like, oh my goodness. And so like one day, 2 days of leftovers, I think I would enjoy. But when it gets to like the fourth or fifth day, and I'm just like, or the sixth or seventh day, and you're into December now, and you're just like, come on, I would like to eat something else now, please.
Yeah, I can just get a little overbearing sometimes. I agree with you there. All right. Well, hey, to you and yours, I hope everyone out there listening had a great Thanksgiving holiday, however you celebrate. And hey, you can't deny it now, the Christmas season is upon us. So put up the tree, put up the lights, however you want to do it. It is a-okay in my book. I already started hearing Mariah Carey weeks ago, so it's Christmas is here, man. Holidays are here. It's just doesn't feel like it, because even here in Virginia, it's cold, it's rainy, it's not as, you know, tepid of a winter as it is. Jeremy, I mean, you're down south, it's probably still like the 50s and 60s there, right?
I'm up in the mountains of the south. I'm up fair here in Appalachia. I can't pronounce it Appalachia, or I will be murdered by my mother. and so it's actually quite cold up here. I actually turned on my heat for the first time since I moved here last night. Today the high is 53 and the low is 32.
Dang.
35 degrees outside right now as we're recording this. So,
yep. I'm sounds happy. Like the winter.
I like it cold.
Yeah, I do as well usually. Well, hey, alongside winter temperatures come the cooling of the hot stove for MLB. It is, we had a really crazy week. with all the deadlines and things like that, holidays happen, you know, even MLB front offices and free agents have to celebrate the holiday. So not a lot of moves happen over the holiday. Nothing on the Royals front, but we do want to sit down and talk some Royals baseball with all you listeners. So first things first, let's go ahead and look at last episode's Q&A responses. We got three of them. The question was, do you think Salvador Perez rebounds next season, or are we seeing the beginning of the end for him? We were all kind of in the same boat that this is the beginning of the end. How quickly that end is coming, that's probably where we disagree a little bit. But unfortunately, our listeners all kind of had the same feeling. So Royal Rupert said, Salvy will have a monster year for the Marlins next year. I like it, Rupert. I like it. Aaron Bailey said, hate to say it, but he's hitting his DH days. It would be great to see him play for a contender in the next couple of years and come back to retire his number when we're contending. I think that would be something that satisfies all parties, kind of. And then Luke 57 says, I'm afraid this is the beginning of the end for him. He's fairly old and has a lot of innings on those knees. I hope he can rebound and continue to perform, but ... And that is where it ended. So I don't think any of us want Salvy's career to end. We're not wishing for that, but it's just a fact of following a player's career on a team, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, as they say, time is undefeated. And, I thought Salvador Perez might have one of those weird careers where he gets real good into his mid to late 30s for a while, like Nelson Cruz did, maybe. But this last year kind of made it look like, the end is coming sooner rather than later, as I think you just said that. I think that's why that sounds so familiar to me.
Yeah, probably so.
But yeah, so that's it's just where we're at.
Yeah, sad but true. We'll continue to look at it, and definitely it's going to be something that we are watching very closely heading into 2024. But like I said, nothing really on the Royals moves this week, not even minor league transactions. There hasn't been anything on that level.
So that has given baseball front offices too.
Yeah, exactly. So that has given some folks some time to look at, you know, free agency and how that is stacking up and how the Royals could play into it. And Jeremy, you know, our longtime listeners will know I love my tinfoil hat. I got it right here next to my desk. And I put mine on because I wanted to try and find out, okay, what could the Royals be looking for in a pitching acquisition? And I want to get a sanity check from you on this, which I know might be asking you a lot as as the resident sane person in this Yeesh. Podcast.
If I'm the same resident sane person, we are in trouble.
So I looked at some of the pitchers that they acquired this offseason and in season last year. So the four that I looked at, Kyle Wright, Nick Anderson, James MacArthur, and Cole Reagans, felt like that was a good group right there. And all four of them have potent curveballs. And not just that, but Kyle Wright and Nick Anderson both ranked in the top 10, I believe it was, for how often they use their curveball among all MLB qualified pitchers. So I know Anderson's a reliever. I know Wright was a starter last year, but both of them lean heavily on that curveball. And so does James MacArthur and Cole Reagans. It's in his arsenal, but it's not his, you know, go-to pitch. So Jeremy, I do want to ask you, like, do you think that could be a sign for what the Royals could be looking for in a free agent pitcher? Maybe they feel like they can work with a player's curveball and have some success with it.
It's possible. I don't know if it's necessarily the curveball so much, because as you pointed out, Cole Reagans has a good curveball, but that isn't his primary pitch. And in fact, he credits most of his new success to his slider, if I'm remembering correctly. Which he added kind of mid-year.
Yeah.
So it's possible. I guess my thought is that they're probably not looking at the curveball and going, this curveball is going to win games necessarily, but saying the way he throws this curveball tells us that he's going to be able to do this and this and that, and that's going to win games. Maybe in the case of Cole Reagan's, you know, when he adds this slider, it's going to be even, you know, it's going to be a really good pitch because of the way he throws his curveball. When James MacArthur throws this pitch mix, it's going to be a good success because of his curveball. You know, that kind of thought process, possibly.
It's just it looks like a quality at the very least. It probably looks like a quality that this pitching coaching staff feels like that they can work with. But like you said, it all, how they throw that curveball and how that figures into their arsenal likely leans on other pitches as well, because I'm sorry, it was I was getting a little nervous last year when Zach Greinke started throwing curveballs, you know, multiple times in a plate appearance.
Yeah. It's MLB The Show. I keep coming back to this because it's a lot of my baseball experience from this year. But one of the things the announcers like to say if you throw a bunch of curveballs in a row is that people don't do that. They don't throw a bunch of curveballs in a row. It's really meant as like a change of pace pitch, not a pitch that you're going to really just lean on all the time, because it's a little bit slower and it's a little bit predictable if you see it coming. And if you hang one, which the more of them you throw, the more likely you are to just miss your grip, miss your, you know, your release point, whatever, it would go a long, long way. You're probably not looking for curveballs just for curveballs sake.
Yeah.
And also I do want to say with Kyle Wright, I really don't think the curveball is necessarily a consideration at all. I think it was just, hey, we can get a 20 game winner who, if he comes back and pitches, is probably going to be, you know, much better than a lot of the guys we have. And we could get him by giving up Jackson Kowar, who we're not getting anything from.
Yeah. That's a good point. Did you see what Kyle Wright said to the Atlanta paper?
Yeah, he's not. I wouldn't be happy if I was him either. You know, he says that the Atlanta told him they're trading off salary, which I think is a little suspect.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, the stuff I've written about multiple times this offseason, where I think a lot of teams are probably going to be trying to cut salary because of rising interest rates. And so, like, the opportunity to make more money is in leaving the money in the bank rather than in, you know, getting more better players on your roster and going for a playoff run. But I think I would be upset if I was Kyle Wright too, just, you know, going from one of the best teams in the league to one of the worst teams.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll get healthy. He'll have some success. They'll sign some other players who are good around him, and the Royals will get to the postseason with him, and he'll feel a little bit differently.
Yeah. Hopefully so. So for those who aren't aware, last week, Kyle Wright was speaking with a reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is the big paper in that area, and he was warning Braves fans about some looming payroll issues and saying, quote, or sorry, saying, I can never get his name right, truth be told. All the Braves fans call him AA, Alex Anthopoulos. Yep. And so basically Wright said that the general manager, quote, had a number that he was given from up top, and that's what he had to work with, end quote. So basically ownership has given him a
general manager.
Yeah. And
the
I don't think
different, but they get the number from the owner and then they got to work with that number.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's like, I'm sorry, I don't agree with the whole shipping out Kyle Wright for payroll thing, because it's not like Kyle Wright was breaking the bank, right?
No, and as I pointed out, like, the move makes sense for Atlanta, who is going to try and compete in 2024.
Yeah.
Kyle Wright is not going to be a part of that. There's a question of whether he'll ever pitch again, because this injury is, you know, this surgery is relatively new. No one, this is not Tommy John. This is not, he'll come back and he'll probably be mostly the same guy. Nobody knows whether he's coming back. There's some people who are theorizing he won't even necessarily be ready at the beginning of 2025, whereas they get Jackson Kowar, who was a highly regarded prospect for legitimate reasons. He's got a really nice fastball, throws it hard. He's got a great changeup. He's got attributes you can work with.
Yep.
And he is still on his rookie deal pre-ARB. And the Atlanta probably is looking at him going, okay, I think we can get something out of this, you know, that Kansas City is not. Whereas we don't know if Kyle Wright's ever going to pitch again. He's definitely not helping us in 2024.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeremy. I do want to ask you or get your opinion on this, excuse me. So we all know the trope about relievers that move on from Kansas City. it was a prevalent thing in 2023. I will say that there were, it wasn't just onesie twosie. It was probably about five or six relievers around the league that the Royals had moved on from who were above average, if not elite.
Well, at least seemed above average at points.
Yes.
Some of those guys, like Albert Abreu was one of the guys who kept coming up. He just got DFA'd because he actually wasn't that good in the end. So, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. You got to look at the whole sample size. Small sample sizes tell weird stories sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I am curious. Do you think that Jackson Kowar in Atlanta is going to continue that idea, that trope, that relievers succeed outside of Kansas City?
I hope so. Like I said, he's got really good stuff. I always want to root for people to have success. When Jacob Junis went to San Francisco, I was very excited for him to kind of bounce back and become, you know, he didn't become, you know, an ace. He's not Garrett Cole over there, but he found some success, and that was, I'm happy for him. So I hope that Jackson Kowar finds some success as well. Just, you know, not against the Royals whenever he plays them.
Yeah. Hey, I did see something on Kings of Kauffman talking about, you know, Jacob Junis, and should the Royals go out and get him? Do you would you agree with that? You know, maybe a low money deal.
I wouldn't probably not go after Jacob Junis. I think that the relationship there was kind of burned.
Ooh, true.
He was really unhappy when Kansas City let him go, and I kind of reading between the lines got the impression that there were a lot of disagreements between him and the team about how to go about helping him improve as a pitcher. I know that I think it was his brother he learned a cutter from.
I think so.
And the Royals didn't seem to be very happy about that, which is one of the reasons I spent so much time last year talking about how it looked like, you know, they were letting guys go to even to Driveline, but to Tread Athletics, just anywhere outside the organization, anywhere they can to get help. And they seem to be more okay with it than they had been in the past.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about, you know, possibly. And you know what? I can, if you want to, you could probably spin it and say, oh, well, this is a new front office. This is a new pitching coaching staff. Not maybe
that new.
Yeah, it's not that different than what Junis was forcibly removed from not too long ago. So, yeah, that's a good point. Couple other players I want to get your opinion on. So I wrote up a piece grading Mikel Garcia's 2023 season. Mm-hmm. Wrote that up on Kings of Kauffman. You can go check that out. So I'm open that I've been pretty bearish on Mikel Garcia's MLB ceiling.
I always, which one is which, bullish and bearish? I never remember which one means you're good or you're high.
So bullish is aggressive and high, and bearish is more.
Okay, so you're worried that he's not going to take that next step.
Yeah, I definitely am. And you know what? It's usually you can go find any stat out there in baseball that fits your narrative. And I'm open about that. But I looked at so many stats of Mikel Garcia that lined up closely with 2021 Nicky Lopez.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm worried. We've seen it before recently, so I'm worried. Okay, well, it's going to happen again. But looking at the final numbers from his 2023 season, I'm like, okay, this is why this was low. So one thing that a lot of people pointed to was his isolated power. His ISO was extremely low. But yeah, you look at his Baseball Savant page, and let's see here. He ranks in the 94th percentile in hard hit rate, 87th percentile for average exit velocity, and 76th percentile for sweet spot rate. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Those are all great numbers. And I took those numbers and I looked back at 2021 Nicky Lopez, and Lopez was not high in any of those areas. So I think Garcia left a whole bunch of production on the plate, looking at, you know, his ground ball rate and his fly ball rate and the difference between the two. So I think that there is something to tap in there, and, you know, a off season in the weight room and working with more coaches and trying to see, okay, this is what you did well, but this is how we can get that launch angle better. This is how we can get some of that bat speed up.
That launch angle's the thing, right? Because you just cited all those stats, but then you look at his barrel percentage, and he's in the 10th percentile.
Right.
And that's not ideal. So what that tells you is that he's hitting the ball hard, but he's not hitting it hard in places where hitting it hard helps.
Yes.
He's hitting it where hitting it hard doesn't do you any good. Straight up, into the ground, etc. So that's really what he's got to work on, is getting the barrel, not on the ball just hard, but getting the barrel on the ball where the launch angle does him the most good. So that's going to be the big question. That ex-WOBA, too, also is a little concerning in the 37th percentile. Though, again, even that is a 318, which is a pretty good number for a WOBA. And it's much higher, I believe, than his real WOBA. Much higher. 299 was his real WOBA. So he was right there at about league average, because that's set to 300 is the league average.
Right.
I believe if it's not set that way, that's how it usually ends up, is right around 300. So my big problem with Mikel Garcia is I think that who he is right now as a hitter is very playable as an excellent defensive shortstop, as an excellent defensive third baseman. He's got to hit better than he did. That's the thing. And so that's why I've been kind of on the trade Mikel Garcia train, is not because I think he's bad, but because I think he's a bad fit for Kansas City. They already have Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop, so Mikel Garcia can't play there. You need to upgrade your bat at third base, though. Now, that's one of your positions where you have the least room to upgrade for Kansas City, like tons of room to upgrade, you know, at catcher, in the outfield, at second base, if Michael Massey isn't going to get things figured out. But he's also a player that is like, okay, he's actually pretty good. He's probably got some real trade value, and he doesn't fit. And you've got to, if you're going to improve your outfield, you're either going to have to pay free agent dollars, which it doesn't seem like the Royals are willing to do, or you're going to have to trade some real talent. And Mikel Garcia seems like a place where they could trade some real talent, and not suffer as much as if they traded, say, a Bobby Witt Jr. Of course,
I definitely agree.
You're still left trying to find a third baseman. But maybe you think, oh, it's easier for us to find a free agent third baseman who fits what we're trying to do, who fits our payroll, than it is an outfielder. So you kind of got to balance it a little bit that way. It's like, well, actually, it's easier to find an outfielder than it is to find a third baseman. Then you go get your outfielder, you keep your Mikel Garcia, you work on him on, you know, which pitches he's trying to hit and where he's trying to hit them, and then you go from there.
Yeah, I think the Royals could benefit from either approach. I don't think that there is a wrong or a right answer, because Mikel Garcia's hitting issues are very fixable. I think yeah. is the right word. It's not a physical ceiling. Like, he hasn't hit his ceiling yet, but until he fixes these issues, then he is going to be limited at the MLB level. I think it's easy to forget. Go ahead.
Hey, he's also, I mean, he's going to be 24 at the start of this next season.
Yeah, still very young.
And so he's still very young, and he had a 84 WRC plus. He's projected for a 94 by FGDC and Steamer. Obviously want to see the Zips projections, but it's not like if they don't trade him or if he doesn't get significantly better that he's valueless. He's a guy that, you know, they can stick over there and he's not killing them.
Exactly. And a couple other points that I feel like I have to point out. So the Royals entered 2023 with the amalgamation of Hunter Dozier, Matt Duffy, and Nicky Lopez being their solution at third base.
Solution, yes.
Yeah. That was inarguably the weakest spot on the infield for the opening day roster. And Michael Garcia came in, absolutely exceeded expectations at a position he'd only played 10 times in his minor league career and did great. He was elite defensively. He had great moments at the plate. He just kind of petered off as the season went along, unfortunately.
That's kind of the big concern I had, is if you look at his splits, in the first half he had a WRC plus of 99, and then in the second half it was 72.
Yeah.
And that's the concern that that's where I'm really focused in, is like, why did he go down? Is he going to be able to make an adjustment? Because that's where the real issue is if he plays a whole season like he played last season, okay, fine. But if he's actually getting worse from now on, like the league figured out something about him and he can't adjust, that's where the issues come in.
Yeah, and I definitely think that it is a long winter until the Royals get some new blood in free agency or start making some news. We are going to be focusing on who is actually going to be on this roster in 2024, and I definitely think that we all should be taking a closer look at Michael Garcia and making our determinations on him. If you want to hear some great insight into the Royals roster, you got to go check out RoyalsReview.com. You could also find Royals Review on X and on Facebook under Royals Review, or you can just keep listening to us. I think we do a pretty decent job, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think we have some information that we like to share with people that's useful and meaningful. And we're a little entertaining sometimes. I mean,
yeah, sometimes.
I think we're so entertaining that I don't know if you listened to Friday's version of Only Weird Sports, but they stole our bit. They were talking about speed and buses, really? and just all kinds of insanity and running people over with buses. And I'm just like, that's our bit. You're stealing our bit.
Nicolas Cage is a terrible bus driver, Jeremy. I will always share that feeling. Oh my goodness. Well, hey, we're already talking about movies and entertainment and stuff. Jeremy, why don't we go ahead and get on out of here with the Royals review? How's that sound?
Yeah, let's keep it short. These people need to go spend some time with their families rather than listen to our voices.
I definitely agree with that. Do you mind kicking us off?
I do not. I'm excited to kick us off. I'm going to give you this game that I've been playing that I'm going to finish as soon as we get off of this podcast. I'm in like the final section. I put my PlayStation in sleep mode. I'm going to go boot it up. I'm going to go knock it out. So I have been playing Like a Dragon Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name. So for those of you who are unaware, the Like a Dragon series, formerly known as the Yakuza series here in the West, is just a boatload of fun, starring the one exception to my straightness, Kazuma Kiryu. He is above gender. He is beyond everything. He is the epitome of humankind.
Okay.
And it's, so in Yakuza 6 looked like it was going to be his last game. He showed up, he did some stuff, he faked his death and walked away. and you knew he was still alive at the end. Spoilers for people who haven't played Yakuza 6. you knew he was alive, but you also knew that he was done. He was going away. And then you get to Yakuza 7, Like a Dragon, when they started making that shift over. Because in Japan, it's always been known as Ryuga Gotoku, which means Like a Dragon. And they just called it Yakuza here in the West, because we don't know what that means. Anyway, so they introduced a new protagonist, Ichiban Kasuga, and I actually wrote about, like, how he was a protagonist. I'm getting way into the weeds here. Moving on. So they introduced a new protagonist. It's like, okay, well, now we're moving on. And then Kiryu shows up at towards the end of the game. And he's like, yo, I'm alive and I'm going to actually do stuff again. And you're like, okay. And then the Ryuga Gotoku Studio, which is, they named their studio after the game, or the game after the studio, I'm not sure. They have a summit every few months that they started doing last year, and they announced three new games last year. There was a remake of a popular spinoff games that was a kind of a historical fiction that came out earlier this year. Ishin, it was great. And then they said, we're going to do Like a Dragon 8, Infinite Wealth, and that's going to be a lot of fun, but it's going to co-star Kasuga and Kiryu.
Ooh.
And we were like, all right, cool. Both of our protagonists. And they said, by the way, you're going to want to know what Kiryu's been up to. So we're going to do a spinoff game. It's what Gaiden means, side story. And it's going to be Kiryu's. And then they put that out. That came out a few weeks ago now. And they were like, okay, it's going to be a little bit shorter game because it was kind of based off a DLC that we were planning for Infinite Wealth. So we're only going to charge $40 for it. I've put 70 hours into it. All the same, it's still got tons of the mini quests and the side quests and the mini games and all that good stuff that they always put in the games. The story is a lot of fun. They introduced a new combat technique. There's different in the brawler games, because they have brawler games and turn-based games. In the brawler games, there's always a variety of combat modes you can switch between, and they introduced the agent mode, which has like a little electric whip he can sling out and grab people and do things to them. Kind of like Spider-Man, Spider-Webs. In fact, they call it a spider. It's so much fun, and I'm just having an absolute blast. This is the most fun I've had in the Yakuza series, and I always have so much fun in the Yakuza series, the Like a Dragon series. So there's some people saying this is a good place to enter the series. It's not. You're going to be so lost if you try and enter the series here. But go play the other games, and then play this game. You'll have a good time.
I love it. Yeah, you've always spoken highly of that series, so you've definitely made an intrigued game player out of me, I will say that. I got a two for one real quick. You were talking about, you know, something in some entertainment coming out of Japan. And that got me for some reason thinking of Battle Royale. Do you remember that movie from like 2000?
I didn't watch it, but I've heard about it. Yeah.
Okay.
I know that the Jennifer Lawrence movies were based on that.
Yeah, so it is a little synopsis.
Hunger
basically
Games.
What this is it's a dystopian thing. In the future, the Japanese government captures a class of ninth grade students and forces them to kill one another under the Revolutionary Battle Royale Act. It is all in Japanese. It is all, you know, Japanese actors and actresses, things like that. Very, very, I think the word is disturbing. Mm-hmm. It's very gory for what it is. It's technically not rated, so that's always a good gauge on where it is. I definitely think it's one that will get you thinking, though. It's got some good subplots and things like that, and I found it... It's always weird to say that it's entertaining when it's such a disturbing thing, but I found it intriguing at least that genre and that situation is always very interesting to see how people respond to different situations.
Absolutely.
My second one is a little bit more on society. It's on Black Friday passed this past week. And just seeing how, I know it's a joke that, you know, the deals aren't the same and things like that. I do, I do miss the Black Friday of old. I understand, you know, consumerism is not something that should be celebrated, in my opinion. But there is something to be said about Black Friday used to give an opportunity for people who didn't have, you know, unlimited funds entering the holiday season. And they were able to go on Black Friday and say, okay, I can get good deals, I know, on this one day, and I can make sure that I can get all my Christmas shopping done, and I could still have memorable gifts for my friends and family. And it just doesn't seem like that anymore on Black Friday. And it's also spread out so much more.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
It seemed like a joke when they started doing sales on Thanksgiving. I was like, oh my gosh, how are they going to go from here? Well, now they just kind of bridge this gap from the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
It's the whole month of November now.
Yeah, fair. And that's the thing. Since it's a whole month, you don't get great deals anymore. It's just all watered down, and it's not as productive, I guess. I'm sure that the sales are still there, I'm sure that businesses are still seeing good sales numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
But for a consumer standpoint, you don't see it as great.
Yeah, my brother and I were actually just talking about this last night, because I was like, I really would like to get, when I go visit my family, they have a really crappy TV in the room that I stay in, and it's got some input lag when I play my video games, which can be very frustrating.
That's old.
I was like, I want to get another TV, but I don't want to spend a lot of money because I don't spend a lot of time there. So I was like, well, maybe I could get a Black Friday TV. And my brother's like, yeah, they don't, no one's got any good deals anymore. You don't have the door busters because you're not trying to get people to bust your door down because you're just doing it for the whole month.
Yep.
I know that Black Friday used to be something that my family, not me personally, though I do have one story that I should probably share sometime that I think is a lot of fun of my experience on Black Friday. But my whole family used to like get excited they'd get the ad on Sunday and be like, all right, we're going to hit this store, and then we're going to hit this store, and then we're going to hit this store. And I would stay home and watch the dog, so that was fine. But they would get excited about like, oh, we're going to try and get these deals and it'll be fun. And then, as you said, they started to push it into Thanksgiving, and my family's like, well, we're not going to not do Thanksgiving so that we can camp out for this stuff.
Exactly.
And it's become kind of a downer, where instead of being excited about making a good deal and really still spending time with your family, just at like 3 a.m. on Black Friday, looking for, camping out in front of the Best Buy or whatever. Now it's just like, well, I'll just order stuff online, and because it's online, they can't limit the quantities in the same way that they did the stores. They don't do the doorbusters, and it's just really a watered down experience.
It is, and I do want to clarify something that I don't miss from the Black Friday of old is the violence that came with it.
And the violence, I gotta tell you, was overblown.
It was sensationalized
as people say there was.
Yeah.
There was, you know, what kind of news does is it looks for the sensational. It always has, but it got especially bad in the internet era where you're hunting for clicks. And so like there would be, you know, isolated instances of people getting in fights or breaking doors down. It happened occasionally, but it was by no means the norm at any point.
Correct. Yeah. All right, listen, those are we went for a while on our reviews there, Jeremy. That is A-okay with me, though.
We're excited to talk about things. That's why we have this. It's good to share with people. I hope people enjoy these. If you ever try out any of the stuff that we've recommended, I would love to hear back from you. Like, hey, I checked this out. I know one of my Twitter followers, I cannot remember his name. I recommended him the Ryuga Gotoku series outside of this, and he told me he's going to play it. He's going to buy it at the beginning of December, and he put a note on his calendar to hit me back up in the middle of December and tell me what he thinks. And I'm so excited to hear from him. I think his name is Cody. So I can't wait for that. So if you've tried out any of our recommendations, please come back and let us know. I love to talk about this stuff. You want to tell me like what you liked, what you didn't like. Love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you could do that via our social medias. They are linked down in the podcast description below. So please go, please, Joe, check them out. You can engage with us on there, but you can always listen to us on Spotify and engage in our Q&As over there. That's a good way to talk with us. Well, Jeremy, let's go ahead and get on out of here. I don't want to keep you from that game much longer. Thank you so much for your support. And until next time, go Royals.